We're studying in the 40th chapter of Isaiah, and we've gotten down to the 26th verse. And in this 40th chapter, God is giving reasons why the children of Israel should look to Him as their leader, why they should depend upon Him, as He prophesies that He will deliver them from their captivity and take them back to the land of Canaan, to the city of Jerusalem, and to reestablish the temple and the worship. And He's given them several arguments. He says that He'll, in verse 11, He shall feed His flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with His arm and carry them in His bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. Then in verse 12, He says that He's measured the waters in the hollow of His hand. That is, He's so great that all the waters upon the earth, the oceans, the rivers, the lakes, can be held in the hollow of His hand, which is certainly an idea of greatness that is beyond our imagination. He's meted out the heaven with the span, that is, the distance between the thumb and the middle finger. He's able to take that and hold or encompass or measure the heavens with it. He's comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. You know, we think of how difficult it is to have a big, heavy truck and machine that'll carry a little amount of dirt. God's weighed all the dust of the earth. He's weighed it all. He's weighed the hills. He's weighed the mountains. And we can imagine, we cannot imagine any device large enough to weigh a mountain. And He goes on to show that nobody has directed the spirit or the mind of God. Nobody's been His counselor. Nobody has taught Him. He is not one who's been taught anything. He already knows it. And so that's the gist of the last part of this 40th chapter of Isaiah. And so in verse 25 He says, "To whom then will you liken me? Or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One?" Now, there's just not anyone that you can liken God to. There's no one that's His equal. Although the people who worship idols, the people who are guilty of forsaking God and taking something else as their God in His place, they then imply that there is somebody else equal to God, or maybe somebody superior to God. But when you get out and examine the thing, no thing is equal to God. And so in verse 26, which is where we're beginning now tonight, "Lift up your eyes on high, and behold who hath created these things." Now, as you lift up your eyes on high, what you're going to see is the things in the heavenly orbits. You're going to see in the daytime the sun, and the sky, the clouds. But at nighttime, you're going to see the moon and the stars and the other suns up there that are orbiting, and the other planets. Those are the things you're going to see at night. So He says, "Lift up your eyes on high and behold who hath created these things." Now, just to stop and think for a moment. Where did these other planets, these other suns, where did they come from? Who created them? And of course, in order to have any kind of an answer to that is to immediately realize that there is some kind of a vastly superior being to anything that we can imagine. And this is what we're talking about when we're talking about God, that bringeth out their host by number. That is, these hosts or these stars, these heavenly bodies, they come out as though they have been regimented in a certain order. And of course, the different formations are there all the time. They're the same. You can navigate by them. You can fix instruments on them, and they're going to be the same every time. And that's the one thing that we can really rely upon, is the place that the stars are. "He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of His might. For that He is strong in power, not one faileth." God is so familiar with these stars that the Bible says He calls them all by name. He knows them. He's familiar with them. He created them. He is the originator of their very function. And not one faileth. Every night, every star is there. It comes out and just as it's supposed to, just as it's planned to. Whatever its orbit is, whatever its time of being in this place or that place is, the star is not going to fail. Well, so in verse 27, why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Now, Jacob here is, of course, referring to God's people, Israel. They are the descendants of Jacob. And Israel was another name given to Jacob. So when he says, why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, he's talking about his people, those that were going to be in captivity by the Babylonians. He says, why do you say my way is hid from the Lord and my judgment is passed over from my God? Now, what these people had a tendency to say is, well, God doesn't know about me. He doesn't know my trouble. He doesn't know my problems, my plight. He's not aware of the troubles that I'm having here. And my judgment is passed over from my God. That is, he's not giving any thought to me, to my needs, to my mind. God has forsaken me. And he says, why do you say that? Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. Aren't you aware that God does not fail? He doesn't forget. He doesn't forsake those that he loves. There is no searching of his understanding. Now, in asking a question and in implying that God has forsaken us and that God has forgotten about us, then we're saying that God doesn't know the best. God is not wise. But he says here, there is no searching of his understanding. In other words, you're not gonna outthink God. You're not gonna second guess him and be right and him be wrong. You're not gonna search out his understanding. His ways are so great and so perfect and so beyond us that we're not gonna figure them all out. And so when his ways do not seem to be our ways, then we need to change our ways to his ways, our time to his time. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increaseth strength. Now this is one of the attributes here that are given to God. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increaseth strength. And he's talking about those that would be considered in the eyes of the world as poor, as weak, as powerless, as unable to control their own destiny. That's who God is talking about here. Those are the ones that he gives power to. And those are the ones that he increaseth the strength of. Now the world might not think of them as having power. But actually, whenever they have God as their leader, God as their father, then truly they have more power at their disposal that they can tap, that they can use, than any other source of power could ever have in this whole universe. Now, one thing we'd like to point out here is that the same one who says that he gives power to the faint and that he gives might to them, to give strength to them that have no might, that same one also promises those who do not obey him, those who do not know him and do not follow him, he promises that he will destroy them. He promises that he will not hear them. And so this has to be taken into context. He's talking about those that are his people and those that are his obedient followers. In verse 30, even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. Now, you know, in this life, the youth seems to have all of the glory and all of the strength and all of the physical prowess. As we look at the events in the sporting world, we see the players there who are so strong and who are so agile and so able to do things. But yet just a few years and they're going to lose that ability. And so he makes the statement that even the youth shall faint and be weary and the young men shall utterly fall. Everybody's going to eventually reach the point in which they're not going to be able to function. They're going to lose their power and their strength. But, he says in verse 31, They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Now they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. To wait upon the Lord simply means that we then are acting in accordance with His purpose. It means that we're willing to take things as He gives them, in His way, in His time, and we do not expect nor demand nor act in such a way that God's going to do things our way. This is where the world misses God so greatly and so flagrantly. They think that they have God with them, but they have God going with them simply on their ground, on their terms, on their conditions. God's never agreed to meet man on his own conditions. Man must meet God on God's conditions. And so to wait here on the Lord doesn't mean that you sit down and don't do anything. Just like the farmer, whenever he goes out and plows and he sows and he is going to make a crop, and he waits on the natural evolvement of the crop before he is able to get the harvest, the waiting that he does doesn't mean that he's not doing anything. He's working. He's working in accordance to the laws of nature, but he doesn't hurry anything up. He lets nature do it in nature's own way. But yet he still plows the ground. He still sows the seed. He still cultivates out the weeds. And he may fertilize, or he may water, or he may do whatever is necessary before he finally then gathers the crop. But all this time, he can be said to be waiting and doing it according to the plan of nature. And so it is with us. He says, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. You're not going to be like the young man that grows weary or that loses his strength or that shall utterly fall and he never gets it back. You know, whenever a football player gets too old to play football and he just over the hill, he's too old, he doesn't come back in 4 or 5 years and say, well, now I got all my strength back. I'm a new person. I can go back and start playing now like I did 10 years ago. He can't do that. But those that wait upon the Lord, he says, shall renew their strength. When they get in a position in which they are faint or feeble, and we're talking about spiritually, we're talking about the moral fiber of humanity, when he gets to the point that he is about downtrodden and cast down, the Lord will renew his strength. He can have strength come back. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. Now, to mount up with wings as eagles implies two or three things. One is the eagle probably is the largest or one of the largest of birds and has the greatest power when it comes to flying. If he's not the greatest, he's counted among the greatest. He's powerful. He has a long wingspan. He has feathers that will really carry him into lofty heights. And he can carry a lot of weight with his claws. They can go down and pick up a small animal and fly away with this animal. But also, some of the Bible scholars have looked into this thing and maybe added a dimension that really is not implied here. But the eagle is a bird that even when he gets old, he has the ability to molt and to shed his old feathers and to grow back new feathers and regain or retain his full flying ability. Then he goes on and says, they shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Well, we know in the natural world that any time a person runs for a long enough period of time, he's going to get tired, going to become weary. And the same is true with the walking. But those who are the followers of God, those who wait upon the Lord, are going to be able to run, as it were, that is, be fully active in a spiritual sense. They're going to be able to walk, as it were, and not grow weary and not faint, because the Lord renews their strength. The more exercise we get spiritually, the stronger we become, and the less apt we are then to grow weary or to faint. So beginning in the 41st chapter of Isaiah, the thought really continues, and